Welcome to the Uncharted Podcast. This week's guest is Fabian, the CEO of Make. Enjoy this episode with a quick introduction from our speaker.
I actually am a mathematician by background. I studied in the beautiful city of Munich, and I always wanted to get into tech and startups. There was one very interesting company called Celonis. They started out doing process mining, analyzing the data of big businesses and trying to understand what's happening in the processes and visualizing that for their customers. I got really excited about that and I tried to join the team, succeeded in doing so and scaled with them for several years. I started the journey when they were 20 people small and I built operations for what's been a decade now, but only for the first half of the decade, because then I went more into like strategy work for Celonis and then also joined one of the acquired companies, which back then was called and what is Make today, or make.com as some like to refer to it. At Celonis, I've had this pleasure of having a journey from 20 to several thousand people. And with Make now, we're on a similar trajectory and we scaled 6x over the last 3.5 years already in terms of headcount, 10x in terms of revenue. And we hope to continue to build this out and bring more and more people this fun and pleasure of building workflow automation with a very visual technology. And that's what we are about today.
And one of the things that was super interesting is you did a bunch of different roles at Celonis. I saw customer success, I saw operations. How much was it you volunteering for the next role versus someone pushing you to go in that direction?
I was working very, very closely with the founders from the very start. And both Alex and Bastian were great mentors over the years. We found a spot for me over time, which was operations, and it covered a lot of different areas in the organization that weren't covered by other more traditional tech departments, whether it's your sales and marketing or your product and engineering. And that helped me to kind of scale and help build in terms of the structures for the company and also kind of shaping a bit the trajectory. It was really exciting because you always have to think about whatever you implement next. Will it also be still working in a couple of years from now? And made it a really exciting journey. And over time, as you grow, you kind of grow with it. So it allowed me to expand the scope, expand the activities that I could do and cover, and build out several amazing teams, like from very operational teams to very strategic teams, from procurement over sales ops to all different areas of the business, basically. And it allowed me to get a very holistic overview. And that's what I'm also passionate about, really building things and really figuring out how we can scale and grow. That's also what really gives me joy every day at Make today, because we have an amazing team, a lot of energy in there. And you want to funnel that and really help shape it so that we can grow together, basically.
You probably could have done a lot of different things at Celonis, but you decided to start at the helm of Make and kind of maybe try redoing the movie. What was the motivation there?
What actually happened was we've reached a certain size at Celonis where we were, I would say, around 1,500 people. Yeah. And we brought in more and more external management that like had been operating large software businesses before.
Sure.
Several senior executives came in, and I kind of transitioned into a role that was more like really supporting the founders on some of the strategy projects, executive cadence, also some M&A projects. But what I could notice is that I really feel the passion in building things. So when I could find a spot where there's an opportunity to go back in and figure things out and help scale the organization and build out the business and serve more and more customers, I got really excited about it. And there's an interesting additional element, which I also need to be excited by the product. And so what was in Celonis, this process mining technology, when people saw it in action for the first time, they were able to see how their procurement process or their accounts payable process actually flows in real time, and it got them the sparkle in the eye. And similarly, when you see people that are leveraging Make as a technology, they also get really excited about being able to drag and drop different systems together and build out a workflow, and suddenly it runs. You click the button, it runs automated through it, and you feel the magic. And when I see that excitement in people kind of sparked by technology, then it also kind of gives me this passion to kind of help build this and grow this
to the next level. As I was preparing for this interview, it hit me why you guys did the rebrand to Make. And I'm always like, holy cow, it aligns really well. It resembles like what you guys want to do, which is people making workflows or passion projects, so on and so on and so forth. I was talking to a friend that was at SurveyMonkey. And one of the things he told me was they actually regretted making the rebrand and I'm supporting another portfolio company I invested in. They regretted it because from an SEO perspective, it took them like a year to catch up and rebuild. So I'm curious from your perspective, I actually think it's like a positive because the name resembles the vision you want it to do. Or were there any downsides to like rebranding that people don't think about? Now that you've done it?
Oh, certainly. It's a very good point. And been a lot of discussion around this in our organization internally as well. And also a lot from our partners and customers, especially at the beginning when you kind of want to search for a solution and suddenly all the old solutions that are out there in the web, you can find them on, under the old brand name. And make is a pretty generic word. It's very hard to find exactly what you're looking for. It took us some time to get this right. And people started to figure out, hey, maybe you're not Googling make, but make.com and so on. And over time, they kind of solved that problem for us as well. Overall, I think it was a very good move. And I think it was overall very successful. What we did was we did all of that at a big bang. We kind of re-platformed the founders of Integromat, Patrick and Andre. They've been working with the entire team on that several years, even before the acquisition through Celonis. And we wanted to kind of put it on a new foundation to kind of scale further and bring more scalability into the accounts of our customers. So we replatformed, we rebranded, we relaunched all at one day. And then we had our customers also migrate to that new technology. So it was a big bet for our organization. In hindsight, it paid off. Did we put ourselves in a lot of stress? Probably yes. But I think now everybody's excited about it. We really can feel this energy of the Make brand and it kind of unites people as well.
As I was preparing for this interview, one of the things that sometimes happens out of serendipity is you just start seeing things and you're like, oh my God, I'm interviewing this person. I can learn from their experience. And I have to give some context on what I'm about to ask you. There's two companies in my portfolio that they raised in 2019, 2020 at the height of the market. For whatever reason, the last year was a little painful for them. And rather than going for that next round of funding on a down round, what they actually did is they trimmed their product and engineering team. It's two community products, and they're actually going back completely to these like no code, low code, where like their engineering product teams went from like 20 people down to one or two. And I think for a lot of products that actually works really well, but for some products, you actually think I need like really big engineering product teams. How do you think about that? Just really curious as someone that invests in a lot of like early stage companies.
I'm very much convinced that if you just want to validate an idea, no code or low code is definitely the way. It makes you move much faster. It allows you to iterate and you get feedback from your users and before you staff a whole engineering team on that. And we see this a lot where like startups and scale-ups are relying on technologies like ours and like really try things out and see what's working and what's not. But I also see this in some like more scaled organizations, like some high growth companies. We have some really exciting customers in that space as well. And there it's more about the mindset in the organization. And if leadership kind of pushes for like iterative approaches, trying out things, experimenting and being creative about finding new solutions, then often they also rely on these no-code technologies, not necessarily for the very core of like where they're delivering all of their value for the business, but like everything that's kind of around it that touches something that you need to adjust very frequently or where you need to react to changing market conditions. In these cases, it's interesting to kind of build it no code and not necessarily have your business, like your engineering team own it, but like the domain experts, someone in your business, like someone who works in the sales team or in the success team or the customer experience team who is really close to that and really can also then adjust quickly, basically.
One of the things I'm seeing, which I actually think is powerful, like no matter how no code or low code you make it, I'm like the least talented person for those things. There's one or two developers I used to work with that like all they build now on is low code and no code and they still support you. There's like one company I met recently, he's taken his whole company on no code, low code to 10 million. And if you think about it, like 10 years ago, that would have been like insane, yes, right? Would have never thought about it. Where does it not make sense to go with a no code, low code solution?
I think like if it's just about like heavy data loading from A to B, these are not the type of use cases that we see customers doing a lot. Usually you have better technology for that. But I think in general, it's more about how integration heavy is something, how complex is the initial setup that you want to build, can you iterate over it, who needs to own it, or who also needs to be able to manage it. And that kind of, for whether it's like internal applications and maybe just small solutions or your entire product, like there's of course then some variance in that. I would say that for our customers, I see it a lot that like you have internal solutions, we build out a no code, like can be a customer portal or like a partner portal, maybe also just some internal workflow that needs an interface. And then you trigger workflow from there again, but it kind of really supports the team on an operational level to kind of not go into so many different systems and try to pull things together manually, but instead like they have it in one place and then can take action from there. What's getting interesting is if you know this is the very core of what you want to deliver to your customers, then at some point there's maybe things where you want to have different mechanisms of scaling or like hosting in different countries and so on. Then maybe that's the parts that you start then to rebuild with your engineers. But we see a lot of engineers that actually, whenever they don't have to code, they rely on no-code technology, but then only later they kind of leverage something else for it.
I've worked for a couple of companies that like have this Y Combinator like attitude of like, hey, just go build something. And the point I'm trying to make is there's a segment of your audience that I'm assuming you have to go to where it's like a behavior change. It's almost like you have to run like a company workshop. I'm just curious, at scale, what have you seen that consistently works to shift that behavior change?
I believe that there's actually something very empowering in these no-code technologies where people that would not have had this possibility, as you said earlier, 10 years ago to build something, they now have the right technologies available at their fingertips to just get started, try it out, build a prototype, build a first solution, have someone use it and see the feedback and go from there. So I think this is very empowering and really opens up a much wider space of people that can now build new solutions and be really creative about that. So that's what we are really excited about. Then if I think about how does this work in an organization, we usually tend to look to the individuals in the organization and we try to find what we call these innovators. And when you think about this innovator, it doesn't necessarily mean this person is like super innovative or even an inventor in that sense, but it's more about this will to drive change in the organization, to figure out a new solution, and also maybe to think beyond the job description and the boundaries of your day-to-day and what is expected of you. And then it really comes down to like this will, basically, on the one side, like really pushing the boundaries, but then also the right skill set. And here, I think it's about the technologies like ours to become more simple and easier to use, to kind of lower that barrier of entry, bring in like other academy courses and so on to make it easy to learn the technology. But then there's of course also this element of the environment you're in. Like if you're in a large organization, you might have constraints in terms of like the access you get to technology, APIs are restricted, maybe you're not even allowed to touch certain systems, it's all locked down by IT. And then you're getting into these challenges. And then we need to help these individuals to navigate the organization, understand how can I get this through the organization and get started to really make change happen. So that's kind of how we think about it.
You've inspired me to go for my next project. One of the questions we love to ask before we say our goodbyes is, if you could go back to any time, what's one piece of advice you would give your younger self?
I think what you pointed out earlier, I had a very exciting journey during my Celonis time. But this has also been a company that grew from 20 people to several thousands. And no matter how hard you try, if you have a company that's in this hypergrowth mode, at some point, the organization tends to outgrow you, I would say. It's just because as a human, you don't scale 2x every year. And so being appreciative of that and being part of that journey and making the most out of it while it lasts, and also understanding that this is an incredibly valuable learning journey, but it allows you then to go back maybe a step and like figure out how do I take all these learnings and apply them in my next role. That's what I would say was one of my biggest learnings from that journey.
You hit a chord because it's easier said than done. This happens at least in the US very, very often where like it's really, really hard to top someone while retaining the, you know, your long-term people that have gotten you there. And the magic is if you could do both.
I think it's tough because of course everybody has this drive to continue to grow and push for the next bigger role and like more responsibility. I think it's really about being very transparent and honest about where we stand and what the trajectory is. It may not always work out, and I'm lucky now that this worked out for me this way and I was able to kind of go into a different role in a similar environment and scale again from there. But sometimes it's also just fair to kind of be very transparent about that and saying that whatever worked 3 years back might not work for the 3 years forward from here. It's about really being transparent about that. And it's also about giving others the chance to make that learning, to be honest. And sometimes it works out and sometimes you take in another role somewhere else, but luckily in the environment of like you're in a fast growing tech company, you're usually not like looking long for your next role and you will be finding a nice spot where you can apply your learnings again.
This has been fantastic. I really appreciate you for coming on. And for everybody listening, we went like all over the place and a lot of it was unplanned. So I really appreciate your flexibility for allowing me to guide the conversation. But I thought this was a really an amazing one. And go build something with Make at Make.com. So until next time, everybody, be well, be safe. And I want to thank the Make team for bringing us together.